I've got Deputy Mayor Axel Beck in the studio. Morning, Axel.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Good. And you're running for mayor. Why would you do a thing like that?
Yeah, you'd have to be, some sort of small head injury or something, I guess. It's a particular difficult time, I suppose. You know, there's lots of changes, quite complex times, and a built-in apologist role for the government, it seems, at the minute. So, yeah, you do have to... You do have to ask why. That's a fair question. I guess ultimately we think about communities. We think about the difference that we can make at any one time. You know,
yeah.
It takes lots of people to put their shoulder to the wheel. And,
yeah.
And I guess I just feel like I'm in a position right now where it's my turn to step up.
Was it like a hard decision, a complicated one? Because I thought I'd heard, I'm slightly out of touch, but I thought I heard you were running, then you weren't running, then you were running. That might have just been rumours. But was it a hard decision to make in that way? Is there a lot to think about? Because it affects your life quite heavily.
Yeah, and it's a decision for the whole family, actually.
You
know, I've got a couple of teenage kids at home still, one at uni, and my wife, obviously, Susan, so as a family, we discussed it because they all get dragged sort of partially into the limelight as well. That was probably the hardest part of it.
Yeah.
But no, I was out early. I was the first one to announce.
And, you were,
yeah. So I guess I just really wanted to make clear that, not to have the swirls and the rumours, but just to say, hey, I'm running for mayor only.
Yes.
And, that's where I stand.
So why that decision?
I think, I've had 6 years as councillor for Tamariki. I'm terrifically proud of what we've been able to achieve locally.
Yeah.
3 years as deputy mayor, which has enabled me to sort of lift my eyes to the wider district.
I'm
pretty excited about that. And, I sort of feel like I can apply myself to the district rather than a ward. Quite frankly, to run unsuccessfully and then slip back into the ward councillor role under somebody else's vision and leadership probably didn't sit that comfortably with me.
Okay, all right. We were talking off the air about you've got the word progressive on the side of your. Oh, I can see your car. I'm looking at your car across the road right now.
Thank you.
But on your hoardings and things. And we were talking about the exact meaning of that. So did you want to tell me what you're meaning by the use of that word?
Yeah. So you had a slightly different angle on it. I've got a bumper sticker for you at the end if you wish.
And oh, yeah, we can swap bumper stickers.
I guess I was really saying, I am actually pleased and proud of what we've done as a team, in the last period. We refreshed our vision 5 years ago now and really tried to put communities back at the heart of it. For me, it was trying to get sort of catch up to the developers. We're actually running behind developers, and they were sort of calling the tunes, and you've seen that here in Raglan as much as anything, where all of a sudden the shape of the community you're in starts to get changed in a way you weren't actually consulted about. It's just sort of happening, with masses of new developments and houses coming in, and the very presence of, and that's a good thing in a lot of ways. It's a positive power to be harnessed, but it also changes the very thing that people are coming for.
Yeah.
Raglan becomes different in the process, as does Te Kauwhata, Pokeno, some of those other fast-growing communities. And so we needed to not only catch up to developers and the growth, but we needed to get ahead. Hence the blueprint work, that master planning for communities and actually trying to capture their voices, the existing community's voices, and let that shape and guide the new ones coming in, to fit in with that.
So the idea is that when you need a new subdivision, for argument's sake, you go to the blueprint and say, here's what the community
wants. What do you think?
Wants.
Yeah, and because there's very few tools. I mean, the RMA is an effects-based piece of legislation, right? So if you're not doing any harm, essentially you should be permitted to do it, right?
Yeah.
I'm not agreeing with that. I'm saying that's the...
That's the reality of it,
That's the reality of it. As opposed to the Town and Country Planning Act, which we came out of, which the UK still has, where it says, hey, if you build 5 houses, that's cool, but if you build 10, you have to think about contributing to a local park. If you build 100, where's the library going to go? Where's the new school going to go? We don't have that anymore, right? We went to an effects base, and developers come in and just say, hey, well, not all developers, obviously, but a lot of developers come in and think about yield. How many sections can I squeeze out?
Well, there's a lot of money at stake. It shouldn't surprise us.
No, that's right. Yeah, so it's a commercial, let the market decide kind of thing. Whereas actually the experience built on, you know, 2,000 years of civilization is that if you build cool places to live, you know, with ways to walk around communities, with parks, with schools, places to linger, places to meet, actually those are better places to live and the sections are worth more anyway. So it, to me, it sort of ends up the same. But to come back to the question, I'm really happy with that work. There's more to do.
So you were quite instrumental with the blueprint process?
Yes, so we had a steering group that that I was part of with four councillors that led that work. That was quite unusual for council, staff and councillors working together in a kind of a workshop steering group way, as opposed to strict management and governance split. And we got a better result. And, you know, I think the biggest turnout we had was here in Raglan, actually, in the hall. Lots of people. And actually nuances in every community, that the tricky one here being how does it sit with Raglan naturally, right, which was so well developed and advanced in its
pre-existing,
own right. Pre-existing. So I am going to try and return to the question that you asked, which is why progressive? So my point is,
yes,
I'm not come in and try and break the system and say everything is wrong. I'm actually, you know, convinced in my own mind that we are on the right track, got further to go, and it's about providing leadership to, you know, progress to further the direction we're already in. That was the implication of that, rather than it's all wrong and it needs to change, which, like, you know, is a legitimate alternative view. And if you're on the outside, that's probably what you would say. You know, I'm going to bring something fresh, something different. Well, I'm not that guy. I'm not I'm not the revolution guy. I'm the evolution guy.
Having said that, we've had the last – Alan's been mayor for 12 years – you might be riding a revolution anyway. The wards, you know, the ward boundaries have been completely reshaped. I think our ward's about the only one that's pretty much the way it used to be. There's two new Māori councillors coming in. There's the growth of the northern part of the district. It's no longer a rurally based district. In fact, it's a slightly schizophrenic one, I feel. Like, you know, what's Raglan got to do with Tamahere, got to do with Huntly, got to do with up the north, you know, and then there's all the rural areas still there. So might we – are we going to see some kind of changes coming in the new, you know, in the new term?
I think we'll see lots of changes coming. I mean, the biggest pressure – well, let's say the two biggest pressures on our district right now, one is growth. Growth puts pressure everywhere on all of the bits of the machine, if you like, that keep going. And, you know, I've had the privilege of leading the wastewater consultation here in Raglan for the last couple of years, mostly online. And the solutions we're coming up with are, you know, remarkably different now than where we started, which was, you know, discharges to the harbour that nobody wants.
More of the same.
More of the same.
Yeah.
And is it possible for us to sort of tweak that a little bit, but, you know, essentially the same? We're coming up with some, you know, completely different solutions. But they also have to be affordable, right? So that, you know, we're not going to get straight to Three Waters right now, are we?
No, we haven't got time to talk about Three Waters. I was thinking about it last night because it came up at the meeting. We can't get into that. That's a whole interview by itself.
No, that's right. But the point is that with growth, you know, you get a lot of pressure on infrastructure. Infrastructure unlocks potential for development. And, you know, we really need more housing, right? There's no question that we have a housing crisis. And actually the market won't fix it. You know, left to its own devices, 5-10% is that affordable housing end, not the social, not the public, but the affordable housing. Whole big conversation about what affordable means, right? But the market does not deliver those. You know, when we have big developments, they're not affordable, right? So that's a key issue that we need to address. And infrastructure unlocks that has to be affordable. So growth is a big issue. The other big issue is government change. Future local government reform, the Three Waters, the RMA reforms, as well as the politics and the DHB and everything else. It's all coming at the same time, and that will fundamentally change who we are and what we need to be.
You might end up mayor of nothing at some point, perhaps. Your seat might be pulled out from under you. If you were to become mayor.
What a weird thing to put yourself in the public eye and the social media, which is quite a tough space for female candidates in particular, actually, at the moment, regrettably. You put yourself in that space, and then a month after you get sworn in, the government tells you how your job description's changing. It's a very weird thing. We don't actually know.
Is that a constant thing that happens?
No, that's just this time. It's this major...
Oh, it's literally that soon after the election?
It's 1 month after the election, the draft report of the future of the local government reform panel comes out, the biggest reform since 1989, and they decided to delay it until just after the election. So you don't actually know what you're swearing
what you're
allegiance
campaigning
to.
On. So if I say to you, are you going to come in and because a big part of the discussion at last night's Meet the Candidates meeting was about the dysfunction of council and how it needs to run more like a business. Is there even any point in asking you about that at this point in time?
Well, the somebody still has to do it, right? So the question is, who will do it?
And in fact, it's probably, even if they do reform, it'll be years down the track from when it actually gets implemented, won't it?
I mean, there's some easy wins which are logical and everyone agrees with, so obviously very unlikely to happen. But things like going to a four-year term, for example.
Yeah.
And you can just do that with a, you know, click of a...
Do you think that's a good idea?
I think it's a great idea. Actually, 3 years comes up very, very quickly.
It's more fun for us here in the media, though.
Well,
we like an election every year.
Yeah, every year. That's right.
Yeah.
Things just take a long time to get through and to actually see things through. I mean, whether, you know, if no matter your political flavour,
yeah,
you know, I think you just need more time. And we see that in central government as well, I guess.
Especially there.
Yeah, and then as we get sick of whatever lot is in at the moment, we think, well, you know, should have a shorter term, can't leave them in there for longer. But actually, things just do take a long time to get through. And that extra little bit of runway, I think, would be useful. What you could also do then is have the local government and central government elections together, a polling day type thing where you'd actually go into the booth and you'd probably double the voter turnout in the local body elections just overnight.
That's definitely a concept. I haven't thought much about that concept, but we'll put it aside though. I want to talk about the business, the idea that council should be run more like a business. I've had the experience. I used to work in the construction industry, and the experience of it's so different. You just things have to get done. If they don't get done, you're out of business, and that's it. So it only works one way. It works well. It doesn't feel like that when projects are happening with council. Everyone's complaining. Having said that, council isn't a business. So, and we went through the 90s reforms was to make councils more like a business. So I thought we were trying to run it like a business. How's
that going?
Yeah, there's so many questions here. Do you acknowledge that there is dysfunction within the council? There's a lot of staff turnover. That maybe some changes need to happen structurally inside? I don't know. And can you really, how much of a business can you make it before it stops functioning anyway?
Yeah. Is it a business? I'm not sure it truly is a business in the sense that ultimately it pays for the bills with ratepayer money, right? So it can't go broke, for example. Technically, it can't go broke.
Didn't they go broke up north?
No, they didn't. And that's the point because they...
One of the councils up north, they had a financial crisis.
Yeah, they had a financial crisis. But in theory, you're broke if you don't have the ability to pay your bills, right? You're technically insolvent. But actually, legislation allows you to turn that into rates. And as long as your view is long enough, you've always got the ability to pay, right? As long as you've got ratepayers, which is a technical argument, and it's a rubbish one.
But it's there nonetheless.
But it's there. And what it does do is it does put into the whole system, I guess, this little bit of it's not as sharp, it's not as focused as a commercial business, which literally, as you say, would fold if it stuffed something up to that scale.
Yeah.
And the Kuiper, it was horrible. I mean, it was many multi-millions of dollars that ratepayers would never, ever be able to repay.
So the government had to bail them out.
Yeah, they got a huge bailout in the end. But there are things which are in the manner of delivering things like building roads, wastewater systems, parks, libraries, buildings, that sort of thing. And we maintain a lot of things. But actually what we do, and I think it's the right way, is because we have that little bit of, different cultural mindset, we aren't necessarily the best at that. And that's why we try not to be in that space as much as possible. So council now, Waikato District anyway, as much as possible is a contract manager, right? So we tend to work out, others deliver it, and we oversee those to make sure that they're run in accordance with the principles of the contract. So for a lot of councils, roading and Three Waters is probably two-thirds of their business.
Yeah.
Both of those we don't do directly. We've got an alliance deliver our roading, and that's on a cost gain, pain or gain share basis. And as of 2 years ago, Watercare look after all of our Three Waters assets, right? So we own the assets, the consents are in our name, but they are the physical operators of that system. And in 28 years from now, they must hand them back in the same, those assets back in the same or better condition than they got them 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Right? So we don't operate those anymore, recognizing that we are not the sharpest, most commercial operator in town. So we've actually let others do that. All of our maintenance, City Care. You know, they are the ones who are out there mowing the lawns and fixing playground equipment, etc.
Isn't there a bit of an irony that Christchurch City Council's CCO is running the stuff in our district?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean,
does it matter?
It does matter, actually, and we've given a lot of thought also to the merits around social procurement, you know, where the money can go around 2, 3, 4 times in that local community, because the guy who looks after the playground lives locally, you know, he'll buy his petrol locally, whatever profit he makes gets reinvested.
Makes a really big difference to the local economy, that sort of thing.
Absolutely does,
it's huge.
Yeah, so there is a real push around, particularly in that sort of maintenance space, I suppose, and looking after our facilities, and there's an extra bit of love that you get for free, you know, when you've got somebody local who's...
Well, we have a local lawn company doing our lawns here, so...
Yeah, so we are looking more and more at that, because there is that balance between ratepayers saying, hey, you're paying too much for something, you know, why can't you just be more efficient about it, versus, you know, maybe you spend an extra dollar or two, but that dollar goes around and around your local community and actually stays in that community rather than goes to, you know, Christchurch or wherever.
Yeah. So let's go back to part of the question I was asking, because I asked about 3-in-1 go. There is a strong public perception that council is dysfunctional at what it does. I personally think a lot of that is not well considered, but I also think there is genuine grounds for criticism as well. What can you as a new mayor do about that? And the big question, we'll just start with that question. I'll stop adding questions to questions.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's no doubt that that we have, in the last couple of years, probably in the last 10 years, been overly ambitious in terms of what we thought we could deliver. So put COVID to one side, right? We all understand that there's been restrictions around labour and materials and so on. But even in normal times, council has not been good at delivering what it said it was going to deliver. And there's a problem with that, because you collect the rates based on paying for the thing you said you were going to deliver and the time frame you were going to deliver. So effectively, some of it, not all of it, of course, some of it's loan funded and you don't draw the loan until you do it. But some of it is rates that's been collected too early, if you like, and you haven't delivered on it. And then you've got what we call carry forwards, you know, at the end of the year, you then say, oh, well, we'll need to bring that project into the next year because we haven't done it yet or haven't finished. And we've not, there's been too many.
Okay.
And communities have waited too long. There's no question about that. I think, though, we need to go more to that better contract management model rather than add more people and try and do it ourselves. I'm still not convinced that from a business efficiency point of view, we are the best in delivering large-scale infrastructure, for example.
Okay.
The other model, actually, which you'd be interested in, is for roads and underground services for new subdivisions. That's council's responsibility, because it has to be to the standard that will serve the community going forward. But the developer pays for that, right? So growth pays for growth. It's not existing ratepayers that pay for that. We've switched to a model now where the developer themselves do that, deliver that, and then vest it in council at the end of it. And their DCs are reduced, right? So again,
is someone observing the work to make sure it's done?
Yes, it's to the right standard. Everything has to be the right standard, the right durability. It has to be, you know, 50-year life for an underground pipe or whatever. So there's no cost cutting. But at the same time, if there's overruns or it goes badly or whatever, that's on them. It's not on the existing ratepayers to pick up. So that efficiency has been left with the developer.
Okay, so you'd see more, it's kind of farming out more, the work.
Yeah, essentially, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And those that have want the commercial upside, i.e. developers, you know, let them take the risk that goes with it. You know, why should the ratepayer take the risk for somebody else's gain?
Okay. All right. The other question I wanted to ask was, I'll just say it the blunt way. I said it to you off the air before. Does a new mayor need a new CEO? Then that flows down to the staff. Sure. Do you need to rebuild the internal system to suit you as a potential new mayor?
Right. Well, it is a fair question in the sense that the council, the elected members, only actually employ one person, right, and that's a CEO.
Yeah.
And the CEO employs everybody else. That contract cycle is a 5-year term that's set by legislation. And can be extended by mutual agreement. I think it's for 2 years maximum, et cetera, et cetera. Well, to answer your question, the CEO actually will finish in November next year is the end of his contract term.
So you say he will, does that mean he's decided to?
His contract arrangement comes to, you know, the cycles comes to an end at in November next year. It's up to him, of course, whether he chooses to reapply, but it will be advertised and it will be open, like an openly advertised, search for a CEO to fill that, whether it's him or not. 21 years, I think he'll have done at that stage. I guess he's got some thinking to do too.
Okay. I guess people listening will be like, go on, Aaron, ask him specifically what he thinks about the CEO, but I know it's a waste of time. You wouldn't have got this far in local body politics if you're that level of bluntness. So,
well, what I can say in reference both to actually Mayor Allen, who's retiring and finishing 12 years, and the CEO who's been there actually in that job. Well, actually, they've both been there a similar length of time, in total as councillor and mayor and as an employee of the council. And actually, the Waikato district's done well. You know, this is not a district that's broke or everything is not being delivered or people are unhappy or whatever. Yeah. I mean, we've got issues, we've got challenges. There's some really exciting opportunities for us to grab. But we're not broken, you know. And I really want to acknowledge those two guys in particular for their leadership through this last couple of decades.
Okay. Okay. Now, where did my question go to? Devolution of council powers to community boards.
Yes.
We had a visit from people from Thames Coromandel District Council. I think it was where your predecessor was at for the Tamahere.
Wally.
Wally, yeah. Yep. I think Wally brought them across, and people were very excited about devolving powers to the community board. No powers have been devolved. They just have control over the discretionary fund, and it's kind of up to them if they can build a good relationship with the rest of council, I think, to be effective. A lot of us really liked what we saw at Thames Coromandel. It's kind of similar to here in that there's these very separate little communities all over the place. And I can see with staff, like, this is not to bag staff, but if they don't live out here, they don't make as good decisions as staff who do live out here. That's just a fact of life. You can't possibly know as much about our town if you don't live here. It's just how it works. Are you supportive of devolving powers to community boards before the government rips it all up anyway?
Yeah, that's right. Well, shout out to Wally too. The two last councillors actually for Tamahere were both called Wally, so I am the new Wally for Tamahere.
All right.
was something I had to shed at the start of my term. But absolutely. And look, the blueprint work really started the whole thinking of that. So by the time you've captured that local voice, you realize that the local voice actually, of course, is much more nuanced than anything you can see from Ngarawahi or Tamahere or Pokono or whatever.
Yeah.
You need to be local to actually see and understand the context. I'm all about that. And you would have heard me say last night that the move to local governance as opposed to local government is very much at the core of where I see things.
Yeah.
I'm Danish, as I think we touched on, so I was born and raised in Denmark, came here as a young teenager, 14-year-old. But in my head, the commune, as it's called over there, kommun, Looks after police, health, education.
That's the word for local government.
Local government, okay, So it's not a happy commune, but it's
I thought this is interesting.
But actually, they have the same origin, right? I mean, the word has that same origin,
and
the Nordic sort of version of fellowship or the togetherness council type, community type things together, is a model that's much more. Much more encompassing in terms of local responsibility, local duties. And I guess, I'm on that page. That's the context in which I grew up and my world views formed. So absolutely. We've got the new CAB budget on one of those lovely acronyms, Community Aspirations and Blueprint Money.
Yeah.
So we've taken a lot of the discretionary funding out of the various buckets, and some of which were overflowing and some of which were completely empty. But you couldn't apply unless it fit with the right bucket, right? And we are moving that back to community boards to distribute in a way that's aligned with community aspirations and blueprint. So that's the framework you have to be in. So you can't just say, look, current community board all love XYZ 10-pin bowling.
Yeah.
We're going to spend all of our money on the 10-pin bowling facility, right? But it actually has to align with that community voice that came through the blueprint, or for a very small rural community where they didn't have a blueprint, their aspirations that have come through some sort of peer review process, let's say, where the community itself has vetted those ideas, not one or two people having taken it over. So that's money, right? And money is important because money allows you to do stuff. And we all know, with all due respects to council, if you give $100 to a community board, they're going to make it go a lot further
council. I run an organisation like that. Run on the smell of an oily rag.
So, exactly. Yeah. And you get volunteers who step up and people donate things and all the rest, which they wouldn't if it was a council-led thing, right? So community-led is really important. The next thing that goes with it is some powers. And that's something I'm spending a lot of time thinking about at the minute. The mayor actually has remarkably little power in our system, but one of the things that you do, you don't actually decide it by yourself, but you recommend to the new elected members, is delegations.
Right.
Who decides what? And you can delegate not so much to community committees because they're not formal structures, but community boards are in effect a subcommittee of council. They're sworn in and have an interest, conflict of interest register, all that sort of stuff.
Yep.
They can actually be delegated, formally delegated powers, and that's what I'm trying to work through now.
Okay, all right. I've got to interrupt because we're running completely out of time. I haven't even talked about quickly touch on your career in the past before you entered local body politics, the stuff that's relevant.
Sure.
To wanting to be mayor.
It's all relevant.
Well, I know, yeah. And
it's
do
been
it in
one long journey.
And do it in 30 seconds as well.
Yeah, that's right. The real quick version, so born in Denmark, came here as a teenager, studied psychology at university, so I've got a Bachelor of Science in Microbiology and Psychology, and then I went on to do a Master's in Industrial and Organizational Psychology. That led me into human resources, so I worked in the private sector as an HR manager for quite some time, and then morphed into sort of sales and marketing, which to me actually is kind of the same. It's about relationships with people and so on. And as I was saying to you earlier, sat opposite Clint back in the day.
Yeah, yeah.
When he was Engineers Union, and I represented NDA Engineering, which was one of the companies I became an owner of. Actually, we had a management buyout, large stainless steel fabricator based in Hamilton, was lucky enough to just pre-GFC to sell my shares, which enabled me to I'm talking minutes before the GFC. It was remarkable. And from that, just spent probably 10 years or so focusing around the family and doing cool things with them and being there for not just sort of the big end of year assembly, but all the little end of week assemblies or the little, parent teacher help you things. And
right.
Yeah. And that sort of morphed into being on school board of trustees and volunteer things. And Nick Minute, I'm on the Tamahere Community Committee and then
councillor.
So that's a real fast.
Version. Yeah. Well, that's cool. We, like I say, we're kind of out of time. There's given that you're inside the organisation, there's lots we could talk about. But yeah, time's up. I'm interviewing the Environment Centre next, who we talk to every month. So yeah, thank you for coming in. Folks, we'll be talking to Axel Beck, who's the current Deputy Mayor, Councillor for Tamahere, and running for Mayor. And good luck with the rest of your campaign.
Yeah, thanks very much.